This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Axis Mundi.
In the summer of 2020, at the same time that Che An was defying the California COVID restrictions at his church in Southern California, a new prototype of a religious right leader was just breaking onto the scene in Northern California. His name was Sean Foyt.
Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is going to shut down all indoor church meetings this week.
Singing has been banned at all church services in California.
This is a new statewide action, effective today.
And I heard that, I was like, okay, it's on.
Possible super spreader concert.
They are packed in front of that stage, mostly maskless.
Sean Foyt.
Let us worship.
It's a super spreader event.
You are not welcome.
Let's go.
Of course, you guys know what we're going to do. We're not going to back down.
Let's go.
Sean Foyt isn't an apostle or a prophet. He's a worship leader and a provocateur. A now ubiquitous, blonde-haired, hippie-looking, charismatic, right-wing Christian nationalist of the First Order. And his rise and his identity have everything to do with the new Apostolic Reformation.
Welcome to Charismatic Revival Fury, the New Apostolic Reformation, a special series by Straight White American Jesus, created and written by Dr. Matthew Taylor, and produced by me, Bradley Onishi. Our sound engineer is Scott Okamoto. If you enjoy the series, please think about giving us a review on Apple Podcast, hitting subscribe in your podcast player, and checking out all that we do at Straight White American Jesus on our website and on our Patreon. Thanks for being here. Here's the show.
But I want to remind you that the New Apostolic Reformation is the most radical change in the way of doing church since the Protestant Reformation. Well, that's what we're springing off into the 21st century.
And Jehu's going to rise up, and we're going to rule and reign through President Trump, and under the lordship of Jesus Christ,
riots and revival actually erupt together. Why shouldn't we be the ones leading the way in all spheres of society?
There's this deluge of revival coming. There's a rushing mighty wind on steroids.
I said many years ago that we would even come to a place of civil war if this continues.
All right, Matt. So Sean Foyt is not an apostle, is not a prophet, not even really a pastor. Who is Sean Foyt?
As I said, Sean Foyt is a worship leader. He's a songwriter, sort of a charismatic revival fury troubadour. He looks like a younger, blonde Weird Al Yankovic. He comes most recently out of Bethel Church in Redding, California. And Bethel, for those who don't know it, is probably the most prominent apostolic prophetic hub in the U.S. It's led by Apostle Bill Johnson and Prophet Chris Vallotton. Bethel has incredible influence in what I call the worship music industrial complex. It has its own music label, worship songs that are being played in countless churches. It's a real force in that worship music industry. And Shawn Foyt was actually a small part of that Bethel breakout into popular worship. He released a worship album with them in 2018. Another central element at Bethel is what is called the Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry. This is a school that was founded right around the same time as Wagner Leadership Institute. But whereas WLI has always catered to mid-career folks who want to get some more training and, as Wagner put it, impartation in ministry, BSSM has always focused more on college-age folks, getting them while they're young. And so you have today 2,000-plus students coming from all over the world to Bethel in Redding, California, which is very close to the California-Oregon border. It's very remote. They go there to learn how to heal, how to cast out demons, how to prophesy, and even raise the dead. So that's the world Shawn Foyt emerges from. Intensive worship music, apostolic and prophetic leadership, and expecting miracles around every corner. Before going to Bethel, Foyt was part of a charismatic apostolic church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, called Life Center. From 2019 into early 2020, Foyt attempted to run for Congress in Northern California, and he failed badly and lost in the primary.
Anyway, I ran for U.S. Congress in a very difficult district in the Bay Area.
Right.
And came in with all the optimism. We're going to flip this thing around. We're going to, you know. And the sad reality is the church didn't vote. They didn't show up.
Right.
And, you know, California went crazy.
Right.
And I could not get rid of that feeling of knowing that I saw behind the veil in the political realm.
During Donald Trump's first impeachment in December of 2019, while Foyt was still a candidate for office in California, he and a bunch of Bethel leaders and other charismatic worship leaders from around the country go to the White House to show their support for Trump. They meet with Trump in the Oval Office, and this meeting produced an iconic photo. I'd encourage you to go look it up. You have 50 young, hip, ethnically diverse Christian worship leaders arrayed around Trump, who's seated at the Resolute desk. And Shawn Foyt is the one guy with his hand out awkwardly touching Trump's sleeve, like he's hoping to get a blessing just by having physical contact with Trump. If only I could touch the hem of his garment, you know?
There are a lot of charismatic guitar-playing worship leaders in the evangelical and Pentecostal worlds. Shawn Foyt's one of many. So how did he get so famous?
Foyt has been a known quantity in charismatic worship circles for quite a while. But in July of 2020, the middle of the first COVID summer, just weeks after George Floyd was murdered, right about the exact same time that Cheon is beginning to defy the California congregational COVID restrictions, Foyt decides he's going to hold a big open-air worship concert on the Golden Gate Bridge. And this is in violation of local COVID restrictions. So Foyt decides to call the concert Let Us Worship. And his team make sure that they video this concert. And within about a day of the actual concert, a slickly edited video is up online showing this group on the Golden Gate Bridge. And this stunt really strikes a chord and goes viral. It keys into what a lot of conservative Christians are feeling 4 months into the pandemic. They're cooped up, wanting to get back to in-person church or other gatherings, frustrated with restrictions, skeptical that COVID is real or really a threat. Foyt decides to take this Let Us Worship tour on the road. He hits dozens of cities over the course of the rest of 2020. He often targets his worship concerts for Black Lives Matter protests in the aftermath of George Floyd's murder. And sometimes he intentionally plays loudly over the shouts of BLM protesters.
Opportunity. And, you know, people are like, yeah, I don't know. Sean seems like he targeted places of crisis. Well, 100% we did. That he targeted places that there was rioting, there was unrest. Of course we did. I mean, that's our call. You know, our mandate is to go where it's dark, is to go where it's difficult, is to go where the light is dim, you know, is go where people are broken. And so, you know, the mandate never changed. I mean, it's the same thing we've been doing for 20 years in the nations. Yeah. It's just now that we focused on America, a lot of those cities look like Portland and Seattle and Minneapolis and Chicago. And, you know, sometimes Christians.
The pinnacle of Foyt's 2020 Let Us Worship tour took place in late October 2020, about a week before the 2020 election, in Washington, D.C., with a huge Charismatic Revival Fury concert on the National Mall in front of the Capitol building. Talk about foreshadowing. Foyt claims that this D.C. National Mall event was the largest church service in America in 2020. And if you're going by in-person numbers after the emergence of COVID, he may well be right. Lou Engel was there on stage doing his thing.
Right now, I want you to get in the small groups. I want you. The blood is our weapon. Begin to plead the blood over your own states right now. Get into small groups and begin to rumble. Just begin to pray the blood of Jesus over your state, over your city. Go, brothers and sisters. We're before the throne of God. Come, let's pray today. Pray for a pro-life government. Heaven is listening now.
Unlike at his other Let Us Worship concerts, at this one on the National Mall, Foyt actually brings Senator Josh Hawley up on stage and lets him speak.
From working on this vote, but I wanted him to come. I feel like he is a sign and a wonder of a new generation. He's the youngest member of the Senate. He's on fire for Jesus. He's a revivalist filled with the Spirit of God, and he's taking a stand for the things we all need to be taking a stand for. So let's just give it up for Senator Josh Hawley. Come on, just give it up. Thank the Lord for him.
It's good to be here with all of you, thousands and thousands of you here on the National Mall. This is incredible. This is just incredible. You know, now, Sean just said, I just happened to come just a little bit ago from that building behind me, the United States Capitol, where we took a vote to advance the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Just a few months later, on January 6th, Hawley would be photographed triumphantly pumping his fist in the air toward the crowds around the Capitol. I'll just pause here to observe that, if you were listening to the last episode, we saw similar premonitions of the Capitol riot in the original National Mall Charismatic Revival Fury event, The Call DC, which Lou Engel and Che On organized in September 2000. And then in that big charismatic gathering in September 2020 called The Return, where Che On prayed for Amy Coney Barrett. We can see multiple trajectories converging towards January 6th with these events at the National Mall, many of them beginning before the presidential election. I found that some of the people who instigated and laid the groundwork for the Christian presence at the Capitol riot were at The Return. Some of them were at this culminating Let Us Worship concert on the Mall. And many of them were at the Jericho March on the National Mall in December 2020. In retrospect, we can see these phenomena of charismatic prophecy and worship concerts on the National Mall in front of the Capitol building were small vibrations on the Richter scale, portents of the big one coming. At any rate, since 2020, Foyt has become a true evangelical celebrity. Traveling the country, leading these worship concerts, hanging out with Donald Trump and U.S. senators and governors, leading protests against Disney, palling around with the Proud Boys, playing at Doug Mastriano campaign events. In fact, Sean Foyt's right-wing celebritydom has progressed to the point where name-brand Republican politicians like Lauren Boebert, Josh Hawley, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Ron DeSantis actually make an effort to be photographed with Sean Foyt.
Given everything you're saying, the next question is really, is Sean Foyt part of the New Apostolic Reformation?
Now that is an interesting question. On the one hand, Sean Foyt doesn't call himself an apostle or a prophet, though he does sometimes prophesy or encourage others to prophesy at his events. I doubt he ever met Peter Wagner. On the other hand, I don't think you can make sense of Sean Foyt without understanding the New Apostolic Reformation. I'm not even sure if he'd recognize that phrase, New Apostolic Reformation. That specific phrase has gone out of vogue in charismatic circles since Peter Wagner's retirement in 2010 and his subsequent death in 2016. But Sean Foyt is a creature who has been shaped and mentored and nurtured in the shadow of the leadership networks of Wagner's New Apostolic Reformation. One thing that might surprise people who listened to the last episode in the series and who've heard of Sean Foyt is that he has a very deep, almost lifelong connection to Che On. When Sean was 17, he actually attended the Call DC in 2000, and he frequently speaks about the profound influence that event had on him and on his politics. As this whole 2020 Let Us Worship campaign gets started, a young preacher named Jay Koopman joins the Let Us Worship tour and starts traveling with Foyt all over the country. Koopman is sort of a right-hand guy and hype man for Foyt, but he's actually the one who does most of the preaching and altar calls at these Let Us Worship events. Well, Koopman was the associate pastor of Harvest Rock Church, Che On's church, and Koopman basically had to get Che On's permission to take a leave of absence to go do this Sean Foyt thing.
Welcome to Equipping the Saints with Che On, and I have two of my favorite people, and they are the founders of Let Us Worship, and they are bringing revival to America. Sean, it's great to have you. Jay Koopman, my spiritual son, but I've known you, Sean, longer. Yeah. I've known you since you were in high school when you volunteered to help us with the call.
Yes, it's been a long time.
But tell us how the genesis, the history of
Let Us. More than that, the church that Foyt belonged to before Bethel, back in Harrisburg Life Center, the pastor there, Charles Stock, was part of the International Coalition of Apostles. He actually taught with Peter Wagner at Wagner Leadership Institute. And Charles Stock is on the Apostolic Council for Che On's gigantic apostolic network, Harvest International Ministry. Then, when Foyt leaves Harrisburg in the 2010s to go to Bethel Church in Redding in Northern California, the pastor apostle at Bethel is Bill Johnson. Again, one of the most prominent apostles in the U.S., maybe in the world. And Bill Johnson is best friends with Che On. So Sean Foyt has been visiting to lead worship at Che On's Harvest Rock Church for years, long before he was famous. Even more, Foyt has said that part of his inspiration for doing this defiant Let Us Worship thing in Northern California was seeing the defiant church services Che On was leading in Southern California. In fact, it's no coincidence that Lou Engel showed up at Foyt's Washington, D.C. National Mall concert. Foyt sometimes calls Lou Engel, Che On's longtime right-hand prophet, a spiritual father to him, and he traces the roots of his Let Us Worship and anti-abortion activism back to the Call D.C. and the transformation it wrought in a young Sean Foyt. He even goes so far as to trace a thread, he calls it a prophetic journey, from his own personal awakening at the Call in 2000, to his Let Us Worship tour ending in D.C. in October 2020, and then to the overturning of Roe v. Wade in 2022.
Kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron, and the Lord spoke to me, you're always binding the devil, but I want you to bind five judges into a coalition of conscience with chains that can't be broken. I want to call those listening right now to, over these days, we are declaring, it is finished. We bind these five judges. Judge Gorsuch, Judge Kavanaugh, Judge Alito, Judge Thomas, and Justice Amy Coney Barrett, and even John Roberts. bind them into a coalition of conscience that over the next 2 months, no death threats, no witchcraft will cause them to change. They will make the declaration. Hallelujah. It is finished.
Come on. It is finished. It is finished. I believe that's so strong. We have to raise up. And I believe, Lou, when we were there in 2020, I was wearing this jacket. We were out in front of the Supreme Court. That night was the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett. I mean, that night, October 25th, they were deliberating for the final confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett on the 25th while we were on the Mall having the largest church service in America in 2020. And so for me, that's 20 years after the call, after my first, I got burdened with this thing. So I am in a prophetic. The context for me is a whole prophetic journey where 20 years later, here we are during the pandemic. ACB gets confirmed while we're there in D.C.
Unbelievable.
And here we are.
Unbelievable. I didn't realize that.
At the heart of Sean Foyt's identity and sense of purpose in the world is more than 20 years of working with and looking up to key figures in the New Apostolic Reformation. And his sense of himself living out a prophetic destiny. I linger on this point about this rat's nest of connections between Che On, Jay Koopman, Charles Stock, Bill Johnson, Lou Engel, the New Apostolic Reformation, and Sean Foyt, because this is how things work in this independent charismatic world. Remember that Peter Wagner set out not to create a denomination or umbrella organization, but to create an entrepreneurial spiritual oligarchy structured around relationships among this elite cast of leaders. On paper, Che On and Lou Engel and Sean Foyt are unrelated. Foyt never joined or worked at On's church or became officially part of Harvest International Ministry, so far as I know. But just beneath that surface layer, there's all these relational connections and affinities among these men. This is what I mean when I talk about this New Apostolic Reformation infrastructure being deeply networked, but loosely affiliated. But the question I'd really like to explore today is about Sean Foyt's ideology. What is Sean Foyt's political theology? What is driving him to do this in-your-face, overtly right-wing, nationally notorious worship tour? And where did that political theology come from?
A lot of people would call Sean Foyt a Christian nationalist. Would you say that that's a good description of his political ideology at this point?
Sure. Given the popular parlance today, it's pretty easy to characterize Sean Foyt as a Christian nationalist. He's even used that terminology to describe himself.
And, you know, I think that so many have run from that title because, you know, the left tries to use it to smear people. However, it's kind of like, well, if Christian nationalist means that I love God and I love the country he put me into, and I want to fight for that country and the best for that country, and I want that country to be a Christian nation, which America is, and I want that country to have the kingdom of God represented, which we do here, then maybe I am a Christian nationalist. I mean, I think we have to come to that point. The book of Psalms has tons of songs written about Israel, and I think Christians need to rise up with a sense of pride, like God's put us here. We're raising our kids and our family here, and we want this place to be a representation of his kingdom on the earth. Why should we not want America to be Christian, you know? So I say embrace it. Don't run from it.
Amen. I love it.
However, as with Che On, I think we need to drill down a little further than that umbrella phrase Christian nationalist. There are a lot of different forms and subcurrents and sub-ideologies of Christian nationalism. And this independent, charismatic, new apostolic reformation current is both very important to understanding Christian nationalism in the U.S., but also more particular than just a generic Christian nationalism. Like with other charismatic right-wing preachers, there's a tendency by the media and other commentators not to take Sean Foyt or his theology very seriously. But if you listen to his sermonizing, and if you pay attention to how he presents his theology, there's actually a coherent and very, very popular theology behind it. For instance, he likes to use the Greek term ekklesia. Ekklesia is usually translated as simply church, And in the original New Testament context, it typically means assembly. But Foyt and many other charismatic preachers sometimes talk about ecclesia as a divinely ordained ruling government. They like to quote that same passage that Chaon quoted in his January 5th speech from Matthew chapter 16, where Jesus says, "On this rock," i.e. on the apostles, "I will build my ecclesia."
On this rock, I'll build my ecclesia. Not my cool, relevant church. On this rock, I'm just going to build like a really cool church. People are going to think it's so cool. We're going to have skinny jeans, and we're just going to be so sweet. People are going to feel so welcome, and they're going to feel like, ah, oh, on this rock, I'm giving my life to the coolest Christian club. No, on this rock, I will build my ecclesia, the ruling body government. The gates of hell shall not prevail.
Foyt frequently talks about our mandate and about the spheres of society or layers of society and how Christians should be leading in every one of those spheres.
And I'm so grateful for this church and churches like this across America, where we are literally, the goal isn't about how many we can gather. The goal is about how many we can send. I love that this church is having people run for school board and running for state senate and running for state congress. It's like, we got to stop abdicating those roles to worldly people. Why shouldn't we be the ones leading the way in all spheres of society?
Sometimes this spheres language even slips into mountain imagery.
I mean, I'm sure it is, but I'm just saying, like, we need to believe that God's called us to invade this mountain of government and bring his kingdom and bring his presence and bring heaven solutions. There are solutions that can only be fixed in this state from heaven.
Amen.
Right? No politicians got the answers. They think they do. They don't got nothing. And I mean, Christians and believers have a bad history of not engaging in the political realm. And it's funny because, you know, we are called to be light in the darkness. We're called to bring hope. We're called to be salt. We're called to go to every sphere of society. Well, I'll tell you one thing. There is one sphere of society that regulates all other spheres. It's the political mountain.
Sean Foyt is also very fond of using military language to describe his worship tours. He says that worship is a weapon, and that the goal of his movement is expanding spiritual territory. All this language gives the Let Us Worship movement more of a guerrilla warfare vibe than a worship concert tour. Foyt and Koopman and their crew are provocatively breaking out of the church world and into the other spheres of society. As he loves to say, the church has left the building.
So Sean Foyt uses imagery and metaphors that are familiar, I think, to some people, but they can be hard to place. Where does he get the language of spheres and this mountain imagery? What does he mean by the political mountain?
The story of where these ideas come from is a very interesting story, and one that I've never seen fully told in print or elsewhere, so I'm going to tell it here. This language and the concepts behind it come straight out of C. Peter Wagner's inner circle and would become a central evangelical rationale for supporting Donald Trump. I'll lay out that story and where these particular ideas and phrases come from in a minute, but before we get there, we need to pause and think about how ideas move around in this independent charismatic world. We've already talked about how Peter Wagner sought to build a loose apostolic and prophetic infrastructure throughout this independent charismatic world, and Wagner called that infrastructure and the theory behind it the New Apostolic Reformation. Now, as we've discussed before, this world is constituted differently from how most churches and denominations operate. It has a different set of conventions and rules because there's not a central organizing structure. There's no denominational governance, there are no official unifying statements of faith, there's no New Apostolic Reformation organization you can point to. What you have instead are these relational networks like Wagner's New Apostolic Reformation, and like the ties among Sean Foyt, Lou Engle, and Che On. These link together leaders and like-minded churches and ministries. It's funny, at one point Wagner and some of his disciples tried to draft a statement of faith for just his own circle, but it never really went anywhere. There just wasn't that much interest in policing theology or finding standardized language. This independent charismatic world is too diffuse, too entrepreneurial, too independent for that. As we explored in the last episode, this new apostolic reformation, sociologically, really functions as a charismatic spiritual oligarchy, where the apostles and prophets become the governing elite, and they make power-sharing arrangements so that they don't compete with one another. Part of that power-sharing arrangement means that they don't pick public fights, and they promote each other's ideas and initiatives. So the call DC might be Che On and Lou Engle's thing, but other apostles and prophets support it and show up to speak there to help On and Engle. Let Us Worship might be Sean Foyt's thing, sponsored at a distance by Che On and Bill Johnson, but you have other apostles and prophets offering up their churches to host Foyt or coming to speak at his concerts. The other thing that holds this whole independent charismatic world together is charismatic media. There's a vast interwoven system of charismatic news outlets like Charisma News and Charisma Magazine. There are charismatic TV channels like TBN or God TV. There are charismatic book publishers like Destiny Image. And there are charismatic prophecy websites and email listservs like Elijah List. One of the unifying ideas that undergirds all of this media is the belief that God still speaks through prophecy. So you have all these different people, some who outright call themselves prophets, some who will just say they're prophetic, some who just have little prophetic insights or interludes. They're all pushing their ideas into the charismatic media slipstream. If you get on some of these email lists like I am, which I don't actually recommend, you can literally have dozens of prophecies and advertisements for prophetic conferences and new books and articles written by prophets delivered to your inbox every day. These often come with advertisements for little trinkets or homeopathic remedies that these prophets are selling, but that's another story. Some of the prophecies from this cacophony just never take hold. Some of them are very vague. It's going to be a year of prosperity and such. But some prophecies or prophetic images become classics, icons, with different prophets and other charismatic media figures picking them up and playing with them, riffing on them, repackaging them. I call these celebrated, durable prophecies prophetic memes. They're like internet memes in that they keep getting repurposed and utilized in different ways. But they're also theological and are ostensibly revelatory, given by God to the prophets. They aren't quite what we would call theological doctrines, but they come pretty close. Huge swaths of people across the charismatic world believe in them. And the prophetic memes become part of the assumed vocabulary, though they might have very little connection to the Bible or traditional Christian theology. These prophetic memes function, at a ground level, sort of like an ad hoc theology. They operate sort of the way that catechism, this process of religious education, might work in other traditions in Christianity. They are the distinctive and unifying beliefs that bind the otherwise disparate independent charismatic world together. To offer one example, there's a huge prophetic meme about the Third Great Awakening. If you remember your high school history, the First Great Awakening was an evangelical revival that broke out in the American colonies in the 1700s with preachers like Jonathan Edwards and George Whitefield. The Second Great Awakening was another explosion of evangelical piety in the early 1800s. Mostly driven by the growth of the Baptist and Methodist churches. Well, as we've already talked about, one of the key emotional drivers of charismaticism is this desire for revival. So for a few decades now, there's been this percolating idea of a third Great Awakening that's going to break out. It's always imminent. This is sometimes combined with another pervasive prophetic meme called the Billion Soul Harvest, which is an idea that when this great revival breaks out, a billion people around the globe are going to convert to charismatic Christianity. Toward the end of his life, Peter Wagner was trying to create financial structures that could help further along this third great awakening and the billion soul harvest. Or to take another example, if you closely followed the Jericho marches that led up to January 6th and then the Capitol riot itself, there were all these people blowing shofars at these events. Shofars are ram's horns that sound vaguely like a trumpet or a bugle if you blow on them. And they're used in Jewish rituals around the Jewish high holidays, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But what are these Christians doing blowing shofars at political events? Well, you won't really find it written down anywhere because blowing shofars is another one of these prophetic memes. It's everywhere in the charismatic world, but also nowhere at the same time. According to the shofar prophetic meme, shofars are weapons of spiritual warfare, and they carry special authority in the spiritual realm. Again, you won't find anything about that in the Bible, but all these charismatic people believe it. Peter Wagner was a genius at developing, recognizing, and promoting promising prophetic memes. And a lot of the people he mentored are now not only charismatic thought leaders, but also leading meme generators.
All right, so let me see if I've got this. Instead of having a systematic theology or statements of faith, like we'd find in denominations and traditional churches, new theological ideas or images move around the New Apostolic Reformation and independent charismatic churches and communities through what you're calling prophetic memes, which prophets promote, and these get carried by and popularized in charismatic media, just like other memes do through other forms of media. Is that how we get what Sean Foyt is talking about with the political mountain or the ecclesia as a ruling government?
Yeah, precisely. When Sean Foyt is talking about the church leading the way in the spheres or the mountains of society, he's invoking one of the major prophetic memes, maybe the ultimate prophetic meme. It's called the Seven Mountain Mandate. But to tell the story of how the Seven Mountain Mandate meme developed, we have to go back before the New Apostolic Reformation concept existed. We have to go back to a night in 1975 when two different men dreamed the same dream. So the story goes, and it's really hard to know how much of this is factual because this story has been told and retold in charismatic circles so many times that it's taken on a mythical quality. But the story goes that two founders and leaders of major evangelical youth organizations were meeting in Colorado to have dinner in 1975. Bill Bright was the founder of Campus Crusade, a very mainstream evangelical college campus ministry. Lauren Cunningham was the founder of Youth with a Mission. Everyone calls it YWAM, which was and is a more edgy, charismatic youth missionary organization. They're going to have dinner. Now, according to Lauren Cunningham, the night before their meeting, he gets a revelation.
And he began to speak about his heart for the nation and said, I want to give you some classroom to disciple, that is, to the nation. And so I had my yellow pad out. Now I have my iPad. And so I started writing it, and they gave me seven of them. And I wrote them down one by one. And he said, now this is how you disciple nation. Only you do it through the people called into these various spheres. He used the term. And this word sphere.
It's important to note Cunningham's terminology in describing this vision. Jesus, in what Christians call the Great Commission, his post-resurrection instructions to his apostles in Matthew chapter 28, says, go into all the world and make disciples of all the nations. Most Christians throughout history have interpreted this commission as go out and evangelize or raise up people who are disciples of Jesus within every nation. Cunningham and many people who share this vision have switched it up. The interpretation is no longer make disciples of people within nations, but disciple nations. In other words, the focus of Christian mission is not the individual disciple, but whole societies through influencing different spheres. So Cunningham gets this revelation of dividing up society into different spheres. He would also sometimes call them the seven mind molders of culture, which isn't exactly a phrase that just trips off the tongue. And the next night, he's going to dinner with Bill Bright, excited to talk about these new ideas he received.
I walked in, shook hands. Hi, Bill. How you doing? We've known each other for quite a while. And I'm pulling out my list, and he was faster than me. He said, Lauren, look what God's shown me. And he had been given the same list as me. And I thought, oh, I wanted to copyright this. But it was an amazing thing. And then Darlene, about 3 weeks later, saw Dr. Schaefer on the television giving the same list. In fact, I think in history you can find others that have given it. Abraham Kuyper in Holland, but he was talking more domains of authority.
According to this legend, these two great evangelical leaders received dual revelations that are then confirmed by Francis Schaefer, a key philosopher and intellectual of the religious right in the 1970s and 1980s. The seven societal spheres, or the seven mind molders of culture, are the family, religion, the schools or education, government and politics, the media, arts and entertainment, and commerce, or sometimes they'll say science and technology. The basic idea coming from Cunningham and Bright was that Christians should not only be involved in the church or religion sphere, but they should try to have a positive influence on all the spheres of society. For Cunningham, how you disciple nations is you get Christians to branch out and have positive influence in all the seven spheres of society. Now, Cunningham knows that this idea of dividing up society into different spheres is not really new. Abraham Kuyper, a Calvinist theologian and politician in the Netherlands in the early 20th century, talked about different spheres of society each having their own culture and sovereignty. You can even trace these ideas, if you squint and turn your head sideways, back to John Calvin, the 16th century Protestant reformer himself. What Cunningham and Bright add to it is a sort of charismatic gloss. Now the idea has been revealed prophetically, as from the mind of God, to two key Christian leaders in the late 20th century. What's interesting is this seven spheres idea doesn't really take off for a while. It appears that YWAM, which was under Cunningham's leadership, used it some in their teaching and training. Cunningham tells the story of his and Bright's dual dreams in a book he wrote in 1988, but by and large, no one's really that interested in it. It's a vaguely prophetic dream, but it doesn't become a prophetic meme until Lance Wallnau hears about it.
So I think a lot of people have heard of Lance Wallnau before. He mentioned as somebody who was going around some of the swing states in 2020 with Che On. He was infamously campaigning on stage with a Pennsylvania gubernatorial candidate, Doug Mastriano. He's somebody that gets mentioned a lot, but I don't think a lot of people actually know that much about. Who's Lance Wallnau?
Lance Wallnau was a Pentecostal businessman who grew up in Pennsylvania. He decided he wanted to be a pastor, so he left his career at a New York Fortune 500 company, only to discover that his church in Rhode Island wasn't taking off. He wasn't seeing revival. If you remember the story of Che On and Lou Engel from the last episode, there are striking parallels here. All of these men were middling pastors in the 1990s who wanted to be part of an extraordinary revival, but weren't seeing it happen. So around the year 2000, Lance Wallnau is kind of casting around for his next thing. He's trying his hand at motivational speaking using his business background, speaking at charismatic conferences, and he happens to meet Lauren Cunningham, who by this time is an elder statesman of the charismatic world. Cunningham tells Wallnau the story of the pair of dreams he had with Bill Bright, and a light bulb goes off for Lance Wallnau.
With Lauren Cunningham, just a little while before that, and Lauren Cunningham said, Lance, did I ever talk about the seven mind molders of culture? And I said, see, he called them mind molders of culture. He said, and the Lord showed me. He said, there are seven spheres. If we disciple these spheres, we could have a harvest of nations. And he says to me, look, and here it is. It's like, you know, the religion sphere of church, and then family, education, and government, and media, and arts, and business. He said, but then...
Now, Wallnau never really picked up on this spheres language. But around the same time, he heard of a vision an acquaintance of an acquaintance had during a near-death experience with seven mountains rising out of an ocean.
And she said to me, Yes. This is so strange. She said, he was there at an ocean, saw a vision of an ocean, and out of the ocean, suddenly seven islands came up, and the islands grew up out of the ocean, became great mountains. And the Lord said to him, those are seven world kingdoms that shape the world. And then one great mountain appeared on the horizon above them. And the Lord said, that is the mountain of my kingdom, and it is greater than all the kingdoms of this earth. And then the Lord spoke to him and pointed at one mountain and said, that is the government mountain, and you are called to go into it, but there must be agreement. At which point he realized that he needed to agree with his prophetic destiny if he was going to come back into his body. And so at that moment, he came into agreement, and next thing you know, his eyes are blinking open and his wife is commanding his spirit back into his body. So I had this.
So Walnow takes the Lauren Cunningham, Bill Bright idea of seven spheres and blends it with this guy's near-death visionary image of seven mountains. And that is how the greatest prophetic meme of all time was born, the Seven Mountain Mandate. Now, Walnow's image and how he used it was much more assertive and combative than the spheres image that Cunningham and Bright had used. They talked about spheres of influence, which is kind of a vague, amorphous, blob-like conception of society. How do you influence a sphere of influence? Who knows? The Seven Spheres image was about influence. It sort of assumes a grassroots approach. More and more Christians going into careers in business or arts and entertainment means that Christian influence in that area grows. Walnow, by attaching this mountain imagery, makes influencing the seven segments of society into a competition. Who can conquer each mountain? Who will control the tops of the mountains? If the Seven Spheres was about a grassroots approach, Walnow's Seven Mountains formulation was about top-down control. And Walnow very much rhetorically plays up that shift in imagery. What had been about Christians influencing or informing every part of society becomes about competition or conquest. So beginning in the year 2000, Walnow starts propagating this Seven Mountains meme. If you look up videos of him, Walnow really does have a motivational speaker's delivery. He loves to speak and preach using a whiteboard or a big pad of paper, and he draws the seven mountains. Sometimes there are gates or thrones at the top of each mountain. And Walnow discusses whether Satan and demons control certain mountains or whether the kingdom of God does.
Only. They aimed at all seven. The goal is take all seven. Christians ought to be looking to show up at the gates. Now look at this. I put gates at the top of the picture. You know why? Because the gates of hell, contrary to what you think, are not all over the church. I thought that's where they were when I was pastoring, but then I realized it wasn't me. I was going to say my deacons, but that's not fair. They were good deacons. The reality is the gates of hell are the spiritual portals over those kings who are influence shapers and decision makers on planet Earth. And where are those kings located? Near the gates. So you put kings near the gates. What do you have? You have a form of government, in a sense. These are called remnant elites. Or
one of the important things to recognize about the Seven Mountains formulation is that the Seven Mountains are operative in every society. So there are seven mountains in the United States: American family, American religion, American education, American media, American arts and entertainment, and American commerce. But there are those same mountains in Brazil, or Canada, or Nigeria. And Christians should be strategizing for how to conquer all of those mountains in every society, so as to disciple those nations. Walnow's Seven Mountains concept is an outline, a charismatically, prophetically inflected program for Christian dominance and Christian supremacy in every nation. Not just how do Christians influence and bring Christian values into each sphere of society, but how do Christians conquer the high places of education, media, government, and on and on. You can fairly accurately call this a form of Christian nationalism, but it really is also an aspiration for a sort of Christian internationalism, or Christian global hegemony.
This is the end of part one of our third episode in the Charismatic Revival Fury series. Episode 2 is available now if you'd like to continue the story. Otherwise, give us a review on Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe, and check out everything we're doing here at Straight White American Jesus. This series is produced by me, Bradley Onishi, written and directed by Dr. Matthew Taylor. Our sound engineer and in-house musician is Scott Okamoto. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Axis Mundi.